Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Well, you know, we got to get better security here. They just let anybody into this place. Door opens, and who walks in? But this guy with a beard.
And a ball cap on.
And a ball cap on.
The city is security enough when you're driving a bus. Don't worry about it.
The funny thing is I put the word out. I said, you all will not know it's Charlie Daniels.
Well, I got my traveling clothes on tonight.
You do? And you notice all the cowboy hats? All the girls wore cowboy hats.
I wore a baseball hat.
Did you get a look at Paula? Paula, come on in here for a second.
And we've got our producer, Rebecca. She's all, because we want a picture with
Rebecca,
you
come on in here
for
a second.
I would love to take a picture with you, but I got to go to Dallas, Texas. So.
Well, we wanted to do our urban cowgirl thing.
I would love it. I would love it.
See?
Hey. How are you?
I'm fine. Forever.
I don't know if you remember, Paula used to be our producer years ago, and now she's our newswoman.
Yeah. Well, mercy.
And then here's Rebecca, who is our new producer.
How are you? Good to see you.
Now, Rebecca worked down in Nashville for the record label that you did your gospel album on.
Oh, yeah, we were just talking about that on the way in. Sparrow record label, yeah.
And she said she probably had ice cream with you one time.
I wouldn't doubt it. Most of the people in the civilized world had ice cream with me at one time or another.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
Oh, it's so great to see you folks. Thank you very
much. You look terrific. Thank you for fitting us in. I know it's been a busy night for you. And I know you were nice enough to, you spent some time earlier tonight with our friend Max Armstrong.
We sure did. What a nice guy. We did a farm report thing that he was doing. He was telling me that he did the farm report, I think, early in the morning.
Yeah.
Nice guy. Enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah.
Got a real heart for the farmers of this country, too.
Yeah.
And he's a young guy, too. And it really surprises people. They say, you mean you're of young guys that are interested in farming? Yeah.
Everybody's a young guy to me. Gosh, I was one of the kids that works for me tonight, and I was talking to him, and we got a merchandise guy that came with us, got those t-shirts and stuff, he's going to be 21 tomorrow. And I said, well, Jimmy, that was about how old you were when you came with us, wasn't it? And he said, no, I was 18. You know, and he's like, golly, he's in his 40s now, you know. Time goes by such a hurry when you're having fun.
Right.
And I got to say, and I'm not saying this just because you're in the studio with us, I've been listening to your new album. By the way, the new album just came out Tuesday was the official release day.
Mm-hmm.
And you sound like you're having so much fun. I mean, there's some serious stuff on the album, but you sound like you're having just a good time.
I am having a ball. I just thank God I can make a living doing something I enjoy so
Amen.
Much.
Amen. Yeah. Really, we say that every night,
yeah.
Charlie.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it great to get up and say, hey, I'm going to work.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I'm excited I'm going to work.
Always say the hardest part about our job is getting here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got to send you a picture of my new guitar. I had one. I had a commemorative Gibson guitar made for 9/11.
Really?
And it's made like a flag.
Oh,
it's got a picture of a flag, and it says "Never Forget 9/11."
Here's a little something I found for you.
Oh,
not knowing, I found a little guitar.
That looks like my guitar.
It's an American flag.
I thank you so very much.
Isn't that the funniest thing?
I think last time I talked to you was New Year's Eve.
It was.
Yeah, are we going to do that again this year?
Yeah.
Well, we better.
You know where I'll be this year?
Where are you going to be?
I will be in. I will be in Tempe, Arizona, where they're playing the national championship college football game.
Woo-hoo.
Okay.
But what I'm hoping is that my team's going to be there, Tennessee Vols.
Yeah.
But we'll be there regardless. But I'm hoping to see the Tennessee Vols there. I don't know.
All right.
Well, I think one of the oddest New Year's Eves we spent with you, you had a private gig in Texas.
No, it was, it was right close to Texas. It was actually in New Mexico. Ruidoso, New Mexico.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an odd thing. There was a guy out there, he's pretty well healed, needless to say, but he had a party for him and about 300 of his closest friends in a museum out there, and he hired us. We went all the way from Tennessee, and he hired another band, you know, to come out and to play, you know, just play music for these people. I don't know how much champagne he bought and food he bought and all this stuff. I don't know what he spent on the thing, but, you know, he sure had a merry or happy New Year's Eve. Yeah. I'll say that for him.
Yeah. I remember saying, when I make it, wink, wink, I'm going to get Charlie Daniels to play my part.
Oh, gosh, bless your heart. We can come play for you, too. You know something, I was thinking on the way in tonight, and as you all know, I travel all the time. I go to all the cities and all the different places. There's a special kind of energy about this city. and you just feel it when you come in. It's a different sort of big city than any other big city in the country. Mm-hmm. And I know y'all travel a lot too, and you know what I'm talking about. But there's neighborhoods everywhere you go. Yeah. There's neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and there's just a real hardcore energy that I feel when I come into this city.
Yeah.
There's something real special about it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's kind of like the best of. Of both worlds, the best of the big city and the best of some country too.
Oh yeah,
it doesn't take you very long to get out, you know, to the country here.
My wife Hazel's always saying, if I had lived in a big city, it would be Chicago.
Huh.
But she says you can drive out the edge of town and look and see. We were seeing. She said you can't see corn growing in New York like that. It was a cornfield today there close to where we were.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's really very mm-hmm. unique for a city of this size. Well, and I was here the day that they announced that Los Angeles was the biggest. Second largest city in the country. I remember mm-hmm. that. I remember mm-hmm. that Floyd Calber, I think it was, or somebody
mm-hmm.
announced it. We were mm-hmm. just happened to be in town, and it was on the census that just came out, and they did that. But I tell you what, it may be a little smaller in Los Angeles, but it's got a lot more going for it as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you've been hanging out in the Midwest, because last Thursday night you did the fair in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Uh-huh.
You were out in Valparaiso.
Yeah,
Valparaiso.
Somewhere else out here. I can't. They all start running together.
Goshen, Indiana.
I'm old. Don't hold it against me.
One of our helpers, we call him Popcorn Eddie B. He's one of our offsite producers. He's been stalking you. He's been to all of those concerts.
Really?
He's been following you around.
Well, he should have come up and said hello.
Oh, he's so funny. In fact, I've got a CD tonight. He said, do you think you could get Charlie to sign it after seeing him four times in 5 days? I haven't been able to get it signed.
I'd love to sign it.
Well, I guess it was 2 years ago, you were here and you did the Sandwich Fair, which is a uh-huh. wonderful fair. That's uh-huh. a September fair. And I've got a picture over here because you made the front page of the Beacon News the next day. You did the Sandwich Fair. And ironically, we saved the picture because we just thought it was the best picture.
This is an album cover picture.
So I framed it for you, and it is such a good picture of you playing fiddle.
I'm doing Orange Blossom Special.
And you're holding it up over your head.
Yeah, that's Orange Blossom Special. That's when the bow hairs fly.
Yeah. And that was on the front page of the paper, so I couldn't believe it. I walked back into our messy office. That's for you.
Oh, for me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bless
and
your heart.
There, I found the paper from 2 years ago. It just tells you how messy our office is.
You ought to see mine. You know something? I cannot, when I get, of course, I'm on the bus so much this time of the year.
Yeah.
But I got my computer. So I can use my cell phone on my computer and all. I answer my email and do my autographs and stuff there. And I get up and about every 2 weeks, I say, my desk is a horrible mess and I'll clean it up and I'll start mm-hmm. putting stuff up. I get everything off of it. 2 days later, you can't even tell the color of the top. And I can't help it. I literally cannot help it. I say, well, I don't want to put this in the drawer because I forget about it. So I lay this over here, and I can't, you know, I got to answer this, and I'm laying stuff, and first thing you know, I don't know where anything is. I don't know what anything is. You know, I'm just in a tither, and I do the same thing. I clean it all up again, and then 2 days later, same thing.
Now, is Hazel the neat Nick in your family?
Hazel is a very neat sort of person. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, she like, if I get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, Hazel makes a bed up.
Oh, opposites attract. That's
well,
for sure.
No, she's absolutely the light of my life.
You guys have been married how long?
38, going on 38 years.
Wow.
Something. I was just a child, you know. When I was a child. No, she was. I wasn't. But gosh, we have had the most. We are having the most wonderful life together. I mean, it just every day is an adventure. Every day, you know. I literally, I'll tell you, at the risk of sounding mushy. I literally enjoy getting up. If Hazel gets up in the morning before I do, I literally enjoy getting out of bed just to go in whatever room she's in.
Hmm.
And my favorite time of night is when I get off stage and come back and get on the bus and she's there waiting on me.
Oh,
it's just a great way to live.
Nice.
Yeah. That's so neat,
terrific.
Too, that she travels with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
She should have come up to say hello. We never met.
Well, you know, I thought about that, but we got our godchild with us tonight.
Oh.
And he would be, in the long history of this radio station, nothing has ever disrupted it, but I think he could probably do it.
That's fine. This is a kid-friendly studio.
I mean, they
allow us in here, so.
We're talking with Charlie Daniels. Go to his website, charliedaniels.com.
Right.
And the new album is Redneck Fiddlin' Man, mm-hmm. and there's a real special Charlie Daniels package with Redneck Fiddlin' Man, the bobbin head.
The bobbin. always call those bobbleheads, you know, because they did them for sports people. I always heard them called bobbleheads. Now, we get one that's a bobbinhead. Oh, it's another company.
It's a different company.
Forgive me. I didn't
know. It was funny because I said to your people, now, bobbins are what we use when we sew. She says, no, it's B-O-B. Apostrophe N, not B-O-B-I-N, as in a bobbin in a sewing machine. But it's the same concept, and it will make you grin when you see Charlie Daniels as a bobbinhead doll.
Well, it looks like my neck's broke. The thing just bounces around.
I said, you have truly made it when you become a bobbinhead doll.
We've had a lot of fun with that thing. You know, we've our fan club president is just a ball of fire, a lady named Ginger Ambrose, and she's the one putting the museum together. She's the one that comes up with all these ideas, and she's always coming up with something. And I had never thought about being a bobbinhead until she brought it up. She said, you know, what do you think? I said, you know, go for it. So we've had a lot of success with them. People seem to enjoy them. So much so that we did a Christmas album. I've always wanted to do White Christmas and Blue Christmas and Green Christmas and Yellow Christmas and I'll Be Home for Christmas and all of those old songs that we have all been used to all our lives. And I finally did an act called Merry Christmas to All, and we just finished it not long ago. So we're going to do a Santa Claus. I'm dressed up in a Santa Claus suit on the cover, and the guys have elf hats. And we went out to the Gibson Guitar Factory, in fact, the one where they make the acoustic guitars at
Bozeman, Montana.
Mills.
Yeah. Oh, at the Opry Mills.
Well, the custom shop and the electric guitars are made in a different place, but out at Opry Mills, they have actually, you can go watch them make guitars there. So we went out there, and all the guys are holding the neck of a guitar, a mandolin, or this, like we're putting it all together. But so we're going to do a Santa Claus bobbin head.
Oh, that's cute.
That's a stretch
that's
for you,
fun.
Charlie.
Well, you know something. Oddly enough, when Hazel puts all this white stuff on my beard and I get that cap and stuff on, I mean, I'm kind of built for it, let's face it.
Well, I was going to say it's the rosy red cheeks, you know.
Well, I think that plus all this poundage that I have. You know.
Well, then I have to ask the controversial question. Do you sleep with a beard in or out?
I never thought about it, you know. I mean, my beard's not real long. I mean, I guess people that have the ZZ Top type beards have to decide whether they want them in or out. But I never thought about that. Whichever way it feels best. If it's cold, I probably sleep in. If it's hot, I sleep out. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at an email here from Steve Ellis, who's probably on the way home from the Peter, Paul, and Mary concert with his family, and he says he wanted to be sure that we let you know that your Christmas story means so much to him and his family every year, because we play Christmas story that you recorded for us. He said our family listens several times each year, as he tells of Grandma and the kids and Cousin Buford. And he has he ever thought of doing a CD as a storyteller? It would be a huge seller. So he says,
you ought to do that.
Thanks,
well, I may do that one of these days. I have kind of flirted with doing some spoken word things, you know, but I haven't really got actually involved in it yet. But there's a possibility I may do that one of these days. And I want to thank you for bringing that up, because that story, though it is not autobiographical, there are a lot of little catches of autobiographical stuff about how I think about Christmas and the way that we celebrated Christmas when I was a kid, and the way that we still celebrated at my house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a special thing for me too, and I appreciate him saying that. I'm glad to know somebody likes that
story.
I got to tell you, there are two things that have become Christmas tradition at this radio station. One is your Christmas story. Uh-huh. The other is we have to play my Christmas love song.
Oh, you like that?
Oh, yeah.
I wrote that for Hazel. I had the honor of taking it home and playing it for her the first time she heard it. I said, listen to this. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, whatever you want for supper for the next 3 months. I'll fry the catfish.
Guitars? You want guitars, honey? Go ahead, buy them.
Well, you know, this will interest you because you're into guitars, Steve, but as you know, the old 59 Gibson Les Pauls were a classic guitar.
Yeah.
And I used to have one, and I'd gotten rid of it over the years. And I got to looking, and they're building a reproduction. And I never had much faith in reproductions, but I thought, you know, it looks so real. I said, I'm going to try this. And Hazel gave me one. She found out I wanted one, gave me one for Christmas. And this thing is absolutely incredible. It's like an old 59 Les Paul. It looks the same. It plays the same. It basically sounds the same.
No kidding.
And I have ordered, you know, some different. I've got, I think, four of them now or something like that that I've, you know, getting and putting together, because I can't have one. I got to have one for the bus and one for the home. One
See?
For the home.
See?
Really? Hey.
Oh, no.
Hey, you know something? They're a good investment, too. Really.
Yep.
And this guitar will, I think, be a classic. I figured out you know, what happened that made guitars so expensive? The classic guitars. Mm. You know, years ago, Fender and Gibson made, in my opinion, the two best electric guitars
yep.
that anybody ever made.
Yep.
Well, you know, Fender, I think, sold a CBS or something like that, and Gibson sold out, and they started making less than desirable mm-hmm. guitars. But the old ones were still good. The new ones were not up to par with the old ones, so the old ones kept going up in price mm-hmm. until they've got to the point that now they're way, way overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
But now both companies have evidently bought their holdings back and both making tremendous guitars
yeah.
again. Gibson is, I run stuff through the custom shop in Nashville with Gibson, and it's just... I mean, it's just amazing what they can do with something.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here talking about guitars. I bet there's nobody out there that cares
about
it.
You don't. In fact, we should invite, if I can con you into doing something in about 6 months, semi-annually, we do a collectible guitar night.
Uh-huh.
And we have people on, and we just talk about collectible guitars. Uh-huh. And we could get you on the phone some night to talk
about
that, too.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be glad to do it. You know who to get a hold of. Just let me know. I'll
sure.
talk collectible. No, I can't even say it. I'm not talking about it. Yeah. Collectible guitars.
And yeah. the funny thing is, when we started doing the shows, we said, oh, we'll do about a half hour. Well, 3 hours later, we're telling people, you got to wait 6 months. We'll do this again.
The phone lines.
So there was that kind of
reaction. Unbelievable.
That kind of
reaction. That's all
great.
Ages.
In fact, Charlie, I've got to tell you a quick story. Absolutely true story. We had a call from a woman. Her son, unfortunately, was killed in the Vietnam War. She had left his room completely untouched. She goes into his room. Under his bed, there's an old Fender guitar. He had bought it about a week before he went into the service.
Tags are still hanging on
Tags
it.
Are still
he slides
on
it under the bed.
Wow.
To cut to the chase, we put her in touch with a friend of ours, Terry from the Guitar Works up in Evanston. A bidding war started. It was a 56 Fender Strat. She wound up selling it for $40,000.
In cherry condition, I think.
Cherry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The
mint
tags
condition.
Were on it.
Yeah.
And $40,000, and when she called us with tears in her voice, she said, my boy would have wanted me to sell it at this point.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
And it just,
definitely.
It was one of those, I get goosebumps when I tell the story, because she was at a point in her life where she needed the money, and it's like he answered her prayers after
What a great story.
And she
is,
was listening at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and she hears Steve raving about guitars doing this and that, me teasing him, and she pulled it out from under the bed and called and said, do you think this is worth anything? Steve said, do not talk to anyone else.
I'm so glad she got a hold of you instead of somebody who would have tried to take advantage of her. A
couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, here,
yeah, that was my first thought.
You know,
yeah.
And what a good thing she got a hold of you, and bless you for guiding her in the right direction. I told you the story about the guitar I lost for 30 years. Didn't
yeah.
I think
and it
I
came
did,
back
yeah.
to you. Yeah.
It came back to me, yeah.
Isn't
absolutely.
Something?
Yeah,
what?
It's in my museum now.
Down in Nashville.
I still think there's a song in that story.
Yeah.
There should be. How I Missed My Old Guitar These Last 30 Years.
Charlie Daniels with us in the studio. The new album is Redneck Fiddlin' Man. Check out the website, charliedaniels.com. You'll find him probably coming to your town if he hasn't already come through.
For a country boy to be misunderstood when the honky-tonks are jumping and the girls are looking good. Yeah, I get excited and some people think I'm rude. It's the way my daddy raised me, it's my rebel attitude. I'm a southern boy, southern born and bred. I got sweet home Alabama buzzing all around in my head. I'm right at home in Georgia, down in Carolina. Yeah, I'd be happy anywhere, but love your Mason-Dixon line. Working and sweating till I hear that whistle blow. Country rocker cooking on my pickup radio. I rush home for a shower and put on my dancing shoes. I get the Friday fever and the Sunday morning blues. And I'm a southern boy, I like a rowdy crowd. We're both thieves on the jukebox and turn that sucker way up loud. Don't need a reservation, we're just having fun. Yeah, it's party time in Dixie. Y'all just come on down and get you some.
hill, like the Bowling Green, Lafayette, Somerset, Boone, the Rocky Mountain. If you don't live in Dixie, then you're only camping out, and I'm a Southern boy. I say my sirs and ma'ams. I'm kind of rough around the edges, but I'm mighty proud of who I am.
Yeah, roll on, Mississippi.
Rock on, Tennessee. If it was good enough for Elvis, you know it's good enough for me. I said if it was good enough for Elvis, you know it's good enough for me. But if the king was crazy about it, then you know it's good enough for me.
Yeah. That's put your hand on the radio, say amen.
That's Southern Boy.
That's from Redneck Fiddlin' Man. That's the new Charlie Daniels album. And you have this new kid singing with you on that
one? Yeah, this kind of homely-looking kid called Travis Tripp.
Yeah.
Actually, what happened was, Steve, Travis, before he did his last album, wanted to get together and write some stuff. We're old friends. We've mm-hmm. I've been knowing Travis since back in the country club days. We toured together a lot and love each other. I mean, he's really a true friend. And he wanted to write some songs for his album. So we went in and we wrote four. We'd never written together in all the years we'd known each other. It was just like, not like falling off a log, it's hard work, but the two of us together, some people I can write with, some people I can't. Yeah. Travis is one of the people that we have the same idea sometimes. So we wrote four songs, and he put two of them on his album. And this was one of the ones that he didn't use, and got listening to it, and I thought, I think I'll put that on my album, by granted. I'm a Southern boy, too, you know. So.
That's fun.
And he was kind enough to come out and sing on it with me. You know, this is a kid, since we're talking about Travis, and of course he's a dear friend of mine, and maybe I am blowing his horn a little bit, but I want to tell you, this is, to me, is one of the kids that could be around for a long, long time. I'm 65 years old, and I'm still doing what I want to do for a living. And I think Travis could do the same thing. I think he could be around because he's got that kind of talent.
Well, Ed, I get the feeling that the both of you are not in it just to be 8x10 glossies for this season. You're in it because you love the music.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of my big ambitions when I started playing professionally was longevity. Mm-hmm. It was one of the things that I wanted, you know, because I was standing on stage and I was looking, and we're outdoors, and I don't know if you've noticed, the moon is full.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I've never seen it more beautiful than it's been the last few nights, and we just happened to be on the road at the time it was coming up. And I was standing on stage, and I looked off over and right above where the grandstand was, and the moon was coming up, and we had all these people out front, and we were having fun, and they were having fun, and I thought the weather was beautiful. It was nice and cool, and, you know, we were just one of those nights. It just don't get much better than this. Mm-hmm. You know, how could I? I told the people when we finished, I said, you know, I want to thank you because you're helping us live our dream. What we want to do is entertain people like you, and I cannot imagine my life without that.
Yeah,
I dearly love it. I mean, I am just literally addicted to it.
When was your first professional gig? The first time you did a gig and they said, Charlie Daniels, here's a paycheck for that.
Well, I guess this is funny. First money I ever made playing music was the guy that taught me to play was a guy named Russell Palmer. I may have told y'all this. I don't know. I've told it so many times. But it was a kid that taught me my first few guitar chords, and him and me used to play together all the time. And I started playing fiddle. Anyway, we're sitting at his daddy's service station one night in Gulf, North Carolina. And we were sitting, he had a guitar and I had a fiddle, and we were just hoping somebody would ask us to play. So this car pulled up, and these people got out to get some gas or something, and it was just two guys and these two ladies, and they said, play us something. And Russell said, why in the world did he ever say it? I don't know. He said, have you got any money? And this lady reached down her purse and came up with four dimes. She gave me 20 cents and him 20 cents. And we played some songs for him.
You got any money?
You got any money, yeah. I mean, we made 20. My first gig paid me 20 cents. I think my next one paid me $2. But when I first started to work actually full-time without playing, you know, I played weekends. I played square dances and things like that. But the first regular job I ever had was in Jacksonville, North Carolina, where the 2nd Marine Division is located. And it was one of the few places that had a big enough club clientele. North Carolina at that time didn't have open bars. They had little 3-2 beer bars, you know, and there was just not enough clientele to really do a six nights a week, except for a place like Jacksonville where all the Marines were. And so we played up there. We used to drive back and forth 50 miles, 100 miles round trip, and I made $50 a week.
Oh my God.
For the first time. That,
wow.
Of course, now we're talking a long time ago too, so that was not near as bad as it sounds like it is now.
Yeah.
But then I think I made 75 or something like that later on. And, you know, we just kind of kind of keep on keeping on. And
well, fast forward for us. How did you go from playing those little gigs to being a guy at the same recording session with a Bob Dylan?
1959, I went to California for the first time. We had a guy that had done some work with us, and he wanted to book us in California. So I said, fine. So we drove out there. I had met a friend. His name was Bill Belcher when he was in the Marine Corps in Jacksonville. And we got to be good friends, and he was living in Fort Worth, Texas. So we went through Fort Worth to see him. And he had a friend by the name of, he was going by the name of Don Johnston at the time, who turned out to be Bob Johnston, who turned out to be a huge producer in Nashville. Mm-hmm. But at that time, he was doing some stuff locally. He was working at Bell Helicopter. And he said, would you guys like to go in the studio and record something? And we said, well, sure, what are we going to record? We'll write something. So we wrote this instrumental called Jaguar and went in and recorded it. And mm-hmm. We've had it released on the Epic record label. And that was 1959. And Bob moved to Nashville in, I think about 66. Mm-hmm. And he called me and said, would you like to come down, you know, and write with me and see what you can get going? Because I was just still beating it out in the beer joints. And I went down, and the Bob Dylan sessions came about that he was recording Bob and had done several albums with him, but he was the guy that brought Bob Dylan to Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I told Bob was coming to town to record some songs and or record an album, which turned out to be Nashville Skyline.
Great.
And I asked him if I could play on one session, and it worked out well, and I did. I played on the whole album.
Didn't Dylan request you to come
back?
Well,
he did. You know what happened was I was working a club in Nashville, and I was packing up at the end of the first session, and Bob Dylan asked Bob Johnson. He said, "Where's he going?" He said, "He's leaving. I've got another guitar player coming in." He said, "I want another guitar player. I want him." Mm-hmm. Well, the reason for that was I was so hungry at the time. I mean, I was into everything. Of course, I was in all of them, man. I still am. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody uses the English language any better than he does. But I was so hanging on everything that he did, every note he played on his guitar, and every word that he said, I was trying to interpret it the mm-hmm. very best I could. And I think the enthusiasm probably was not the musicianship, for sure. I think it was enthusiasm probably that rubbed off, you know. But that was such a big thing for me.
Oh, yeah.
When did you know that this was going to be your career? Because you had to know kind of early on that you had a kind of a gift for it. In fact, we loved when you were on CMT with K.T. Oslin, and you did the first song you ever wrote.
Yeah, I'm surprised I can still remember that. In fact, I probably should forget it. It's pretty bad. But I had a desire to be an entertainer, even back before I ever knew anything about playing or anything. I mean, I used to go see shows, and I'd see people dressed up in these costumes in their own stage in front of a microphone, and I just fantasized about being there. Mm-hmm. And I had no wherewithal whatsoever to get to that, you know. And of course, it was a long, long trail, but I think it starts with a seed and a desire. You know, it's one of the things that success and happiness, and I think being happy is a conscious decision. I think anything positive is a conscious decision. You got to decide, I really want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide, you know, you don't decide you want to do something because it's glamorous or just because you're going to make a lot of money at it or for any other reason that yeah. I want to spend my life doing that. Something, my dad was tickled to death to go around, you know, looking at pine trees all his life. He loved the timber business. Mm-hmm. And he felt the same way about it that I did, you know, do playing music. Other people want to spend their life, you know, farming or talking over mm-hmm. microphones like
sure.
you folks get so much of your charge out of being on the radio. Me, it's, you know, it's playing music. And I think you have to have that desire, that burning desire, that you want it a little bit more than most of the people that are going to try it are going to, that you've got to, you know, how bad do you want it? If you don't want it bad enough, don't start out. But if you want it bad enough and you're willing to go for it, then, you know, get out there and get after it.
Well, as I said at the outset, you sure look like you're enjoying yourself.
Oh, I am.
Having a good time. I'm going to get serious with you for just a second, then we got to take a break.
Sure.
You look really good. Mm-hmm. How's your health?
My health is wonderful. Well, I had the prostate cancer last year. I had had it taken out. Had the radical prostatectomy, rectomy, or something. I don't know what to call it. I can't say it. But anyway, I had the whole prostate removed because it was recommended by both of the doctors that I mm-hmm. went to. And what I cannot impress this on anybody enough. For years, I went and had my PSA levels checked. And I tended to have an elevated PSA level, which is how they detect prostate cancer. But have your PSA levels checked, and if it gets high, let the doctor do a biopsy. It's no big deal. It's no big deal whatsoever. What the big deal is, if you have prostate cancer and it is contained in your prostate, when it's 100% curable, they take it out, it's all over. You know, they sew you up, you go home and heal up for 6 weeks or so, and you're back at it again. But if you wait, if you don't keep on top of that, and you wait and you do get it and it gets into the lymph nodes and it moves on outside the prostate, you're in big trouble. So every time, people, my age, they say people over 50. I say people over 40 should have their PSA checked. When you go in for your checkup, they're going to pull some blood anyway to do cholesterol and everything. So just tell me what your PSA level's checked. And if it gets elevated, and the doctor thinks it's necessary, there's a very simple way, and it's a very painless way to do a biopsy and find out if you do. And thank God they found this in a biopsy that we did, and my doctor said, let's take it out. And I said, let's do it.
All right.
Charlie Daniels, Redneck Fiddlin' Man is the latest album. Check him out on the internet.
Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me away, come? 'Cause I got the blues. Now these bricks and sidewalks just don't suit my shoes. Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me away, come? Tired of being alone. I just ain't that tough. I think I've had enough. I just wanna go home. Well, the music and the bright lights and the women and the wine took all of my money, burned a hole in my mind. And now the party is over. Through. Well, the last bell's ringing, the fat lady's singing, and the moon just turned blue. Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me to Waco? 'Cause I got the blues. These big city sidewalks just don't suit my shoes. Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me to Waco? Tired of being alone. Well, I just ain't that tough. I think I've had enough. I just wanna go home. Jump on a Greyhound, but I ain't got no money at all. Or I'd hop me a freight train, but I'm afraid I might fall. Or I'd flag down a semi, put my thumb in the air. Just give me a ride to the East Texas line, and I can walk home from there. Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me to Waco? 'Cause I got the blues. And these big city sidewalks, they just don't suit my shoes. Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me to Waco? Tired of being alone. Just ain't that tough. Think I've had enough. I just wanna go home. Won't somebody somewhere come up here and take me to Waco? Tired of being alone. I just ain't that tough.
That's Charlie Daniels. That's Waco. That's from the new album, Redneck Fiddlin' Man. And once again, Charlie is trying to help some new kid on the block, giving a kid a break.
Garth Brooks was nice enough to come and sing harmony on that song with me.
That's good.
And I really appreciate it. I'll tell you something. He's a good guy. He's a good person.
Yeah.
And for him to go out of his way to do that, I really did appreciate it.
Well, you know, he's been stealing your style of dress for so many years.
Yeah.
He owed you something.
Oh, I don't know about that. You know, Garth's from Oklahoma, they kind of dress that way out there. Yeah. Absolutely. He's a good guy. There's some good people in this business.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, there's some really fine folks.
Well, we've said it. I'm sure we've said it, too. If we didn't live in Chicago, we'd be living down in Nashville.
Well, y'all just come on down and bring a remote with you. And just work.
tempt us.
In a New York minute. Yeah.
It is a great place, Nashville, especially if you're into the music. It's just a great place to, you know, I say Nashville, Middle Tennessee. I don't actually live in Nashville. Nashville's getting to be a big town anymore with all the inherent problems with the traffic. And we were talking off mic a while ago about the traffic. We've got three major interstates that dump right into the city right now without the benefit of a ring road, which they're working on now, but it'll be a few years before they get it done. But everything just dumps right down into Nashville, and boy, you got to kind of, you know, catch can when you go through there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about, I ride through other cities, and I know how strange it seemed to me, and if we're looking for places to turn, like coming in here tonight, you know, with the bus, and we were trying to, well, is this North Wacker, South Wacker, or what?
Yeah.
We don't quite know. But I wonder how people feel when they come to Nashville now, because it's gotten to be a big town, and there's so many choices and so many different ways to go. We've got, I'm sure you heard of our football team.
Yeah.
Thanks to you.
Oh, I love my Tennessee Titans. I love my Tennessee Vols. We're going to play halftime show at the Tennessee, Alabama. You were just talking about the Roll Tide people.
Yeah.
They're going to be in Knoxville.
Well, you better not show your true colors, because those Bama
kids. Let me tell you what. That ain't, you know, I got a guy in the band from Alabama, Charlie Hayward. He's from right down there in the middle of it, down in Holt, Alabama, which is right next to Tuscaloosa. We get along great. I mean, that's, you know, a SEC football conference has got to be just the greatest football conference.
Well, it reminds me of back in the 70s, the Ole Miss rivalry.
Oh, yeah, oh. Ole Miss. And, you know, the thing about, there's so many rivalries in the SEC. There's everybody in Florida.
That's right.
Because everybody, people say, who's your favorite team? Well, Tennessee and whoever's playing Florida. That's my two favorite teams. You know, but really, I mean, the rivalry is between, you know, so many different teams. It's like, it used to be that way with Alabama, because Alabama was such a powerhouse of football, and they will be again. And, of course, the Ole Miss in Alabama. Then you got Auburn in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a big rivalry going to Vanderbilt and Tennessee, except Tennessee's always got the upper hand. Vanderbilt just can't quite seem to field a football team. You know, it's been a long time since they've been Tennessee. But I remember years ago, back when Alabama, in fact, I think Bear Bryant was still coaching there at the time, one Saturday, lo and behold, lowly Vanderbilt University beat the mighty Crimson Tide, and nobody, you could have won $10 million on that game. There's no telling what the odds were on it. I mean, if you were dealing with one of your I wonder how many bookies actually went broke because of that football game. I don't know if it probably hadn't happened in 50 years or something like that, but it's a great, great football conference.
You've written songs, and there's a new one on the Redneck Fiddlin' Man album about NASCAR and car racing. Have you ever done anything about your love of football? And
Well, I really haven't. You know, I probably should.
Yeah,
I probably should do that. Yeah, I probably should do that.
And where are your bulletproof vests?
Well, we're going to be in Knoxville. I ain't worried about that.
Okay.
But, we've done that before. And every time I go over there and perform, it rains. Every time it rains, and every time I go over there and it rains, somebody turns around and points at me. I mean, I can just go to the game.
Yeah.
And points at me.
It's Charlie's here.
You brought the rain. Yeah. So I hope it's real dry over in Knoxville this time. But it's such a, you go over there, you got these 107,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second largest college football stadium in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are so into that football team. I mean, it's everybody's wearing orange, and everybody's, you know, the stands, every time Tennessee does something, the stands just erupt, and it's just a great feeling, you know.
Yeah.
That's what college football ought to be about anyway.
Would that be your fantasy gig, being a sportscaster?
You know what? I don't think I could. I don't think I could probably follow the game fast enough to to call it. Mm-hmm. But if I was going to do, If I had another profession, I would probably either be playing records or hopefully doing what you folks do, sitting just talking, you know, and just conversing with people and communicating with people. I love communications. That's my thing.
Well, in fact, you can check out Charlie's Soapbox at the website. And now Grits Magazine is going to be running here.
Yeah, they run, let's see, I think Grits comes out, what, once a month or something like that. And they, Michael Smith chooses one of the soapboxes and puts it in there.
Right.
And I get quite a bit of feedback from there.
Well, I bet you do.
Some people agree, some people don't. But you know, that's the great thing about it. Is let's have some dialogue on things and let's express ourselves. Let's express our minds and let's have, you know, let's have some dialogue and say how we feel about things. You know, if 75% of the electorate of this country ever went and voted at any one time, it would shake the political foundations of this country.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it would just be amazing. We can't get everybody to go out and vote. That's the ultimate for expressing yourself.
Well, I got to tell you, though, sitting here, there are some times when we take calls from people and I think, you know, I'm not sure I want that person to vote, Charlie.
Well,
you know, it's a little scary sometimes, you know. Say, do us a favor and stay home that day.
You wonder who they're going to, you know. Yeah.
Well, speaking of expressing yourself, you did that beautifully, in my opinion, with The Last Fallen Hero.
Thank you.
And that's on the album, Redneck Man, and that's a song that it resulted in some controversy for you pre 4th of July.
Let me explain what the song's about first of all. I wrote it in tribute to the people of 9/11. You know, it's people who live among us that I feel that we kind of take for granted until we need them, and then when we need them they always come running. I'm talking about our policemen, our firemen, our people in the emergency services that drive the ambulances and that sort of thing, and the people who wear the uniform of this country. And I don't think that's ever been proven any more so than it was proven on September 11th last year. We'll never know how many heroes lost their lives. We'll never know how many firemen ran upstairs to grab somebody, or how many policemen, did the same thing, or how many people stayed in the building too long, or what happened on that plane that went down in Pennsylvania, or the stories of how many heroes they were in the Pentagon. But we had a lot of them. And they were people that deserved to be remembered. Well, this year we were asked to do a 4th of July show called A Capital 4th on PBS, and I was deeply honored to be asked to do it because it's a traditional show. This is, I think, 21st year. And when we submitted the songs we wanted to do, the producer said, you cannot do the Last Fallen Hero song. And I said, well, why not? Well, you know, we don't want any songs like that. We want watermelon and hot dogs and corn on the cob and fireworks and rah-rah the flag, you know, and that sort of thing. And we don't want any of those kind of songs. You know, we don't want any sadness or anything like that. And we've been doing this for 20 years and we know what we're doing. And I said, well, you know, this is not your everyday run-of-the-mill 4th of July. This is the first 4th of July after the tragedy we suffered on 9/11 last year. It's been less than a year. And, you know, you're telling me you're going to do 90 minutes worth of television and you're not going to even mention what's on everybody's mind anyway. How can you look at an American flag waving in the breeze or anything that's really, really American and not think about what happened to us last year? I can't. I mean, it stays on my mind. It's right there all the time. And I said, I don't want to be a part of something that, I mean, you got a right to do your TV show any way you want to, but I don't want to be a part of something where I cannot mention the victims of 9/11, or I can't say something about the men and women who serve this country in uniform. How would they feel overseas in harm's way for a country that's too politically correct to even mention the war that they're in. And I just rather not be a part of it. Y'all go ahead and do that. And I went down to Atlanta and you know, played down there. But I just couldn't, you know, everybody has a right to their opinion, but this to me just bordered on, in my opinion, I'm sure a lot of people would differ with that, but this in my opinion bordered on almost being un-American. You don't have to take the whole show up. You don't have to show the trade towers going down again, but how can you do an hour and a half of television, not at least say, we want to remember the people who lost their lives in the defense of this country, you know, last year. And that's the long and short of it. And I still, you know, it's not a morbid song. It's not a, you know, it's not a mean song. It's not a mean-spirited song. It's just a song in tribute to these people.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see anything wrong with it.
the cowards came by morning and attacked without a warning, leaving flames and death and chaos in our streets. And in the middle of this fiery hell, brave heroes fell. In the skies of Pennsylvania, on a plane bound for destruction, with the devil and his angels at the wheel. They never reached their target on the ground. Brave heroes brought it down. This is a righteous cause, so without doubt or pause, I will do what my country asks of me. Make any sacrifice, we'll pay whatever price, so the children of tomorrow can be free. Lead on red, white, and blue, and we will follow you until we win the final victory. God help us do our best. We will not slack or rest till the last fallen hero rests in peace. Now the winds of war are blowing, and there's no way of knowing where this bloody path we're traveling will lead. We must follow till the end, or face it all again. And make no mistake about it, write it, preach it, talk and shout it, across the mountains and the deserts and the seas. The blood of innocence and shame will not be shed in vain. This is a righteous cause, so without doubt or pause, I will do what my country asks of me. Make any sacrifice, we'll pay whatever price, so the children of tomorrow can be free. Lead on red, white, and blue, and we will follow you until we win the final victory. Rest in peace.
Charlie Daniels, the last fallen hero.
I didn't think a snare drum was ever going to quit, did you?
And that's on the new album, Redneck Fiddlin' Man.
Yeah.
The album is terrific, and Charlie is nice enough to spend some time with us after a very busy day, a hectic schedule, and he has a lot of other nights of entertaining that he has to get to. But we were talking earlier tonight, speaking of heroes, we got a little surprise for you. We're talking guitars with Charlie, as we get the chance to do. And you were mentioning you have quite a collection of Les Paul guitars, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, gosh, I got up in the teens. I can't remember.
In the teens?
Uh-huh. Some, about probably 14, 15, something like that.
Oh, gosh.
I guess. And more ordered. I'm ordering more all the time.
Well, keep some under the bed and water them well.
I will do that.
Because they will grow.
And hope that they will blossom, right?
Yeah.
Well, don't you guys, you guitar guys, call that a serious case of gas, guitar acquisition syndrome?
I had never heard that before.
Yes. Okay.
But I've got it.
Because, again, Charlie looked at me like, oh, no, what happened?
I've been wondering what it was bothering me. That's what it is, exactly what it is, definitely. Yeah.
Well, Lester, how are you doing tonight?
Johnny, I'm doing great. We were talking about you at dinner time tonight.
Oh, how sweet.
And Monday night, we had some guests from Atlanta that came in, and it was a gal with her husband.
You had our friend Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks on the show
with
you.
Did you know that?
Of course.
Yes. Oh, Susan and Derek are friends of ours.
The slide player?
Yeah, that little, and he's with Allman Brothers Band, and
right.
Susan is the fabulous blues singer. Yeah.
They come up, first they come in the dressing room, and she was holding the little baby. His name is Charlie. And I don't know, I guess he's a couple of 3 months old. Something like that.
Yeah.
And someone whispered in my ear that she was a great singer and he was a great player. So I says, would you kids like to come up and sing and play? Sure. So just as I was ready to go out on the stage, I says, by the way, bring Charlie with you. That's the baby. So they came up on the stage. He played the guitar, and she sang some fast blues, and Charlie wasn't there. And so after the first number, I asked if she would mind bringing Charlie up. And so they went out in the audience, and someone was holding Charlie, one of their other friends. They brought Charlie up on the stage, and I asked her if she would sing one song along with Charlie here, and she sang, and it wasn't a dry eye in the place. She sang "Amazing Grace."
Oh yeah.
And with that baby, and she's so pretty anyway.
Yeah.
And they both look like they fell off a truck in Amish country somewhere. they got real healthy, rosy cheeks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Susan is a dear friend, and what a talent.
Oh.
Isn't she, Grace?
She sure is. Les, in fact, at redhotred.com, the website.
We're looking at a picture from this past Monday night.
And there
you're
are.
Kidding.
No, yeah. And there's Susan Whalen, and she's got Charlie in her arms, and there's Derek. Derek Trucks sitting next to her, just grinning from ear to ear. And then this guy, Zach Wild, was performing on Monday night with you.
Yeah.
And his picture's up there as well.
That was a fiddle player.
You guys are ahead of us.
Yeah, there is a fiddle player up there.
Yeah, there's a fiddle player there.
Les,
yeah.
Do you remember who he was on Monday night?
Who is the fiddle player, Les?
Christian House. He's very good.
Oh, okay. Well, he looks like a happy guy.
he's from Columbus, Ohio. And he's been coming in there whenever he moved to New York, but he's been in Europe, touring Europe. And so he just got back last night, Monday night, and they come running in.
Hey, Les, settle the controversy. Are you 87 or 88?
87.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank God.
We haven't talked to you since CBS Sunday Morning did that wonderful 10-minute piece on you.
I didn't see it.
It was terrific, Les.
Oh, it was great. But is it true that you have guitars all over your bed?
I guess so.
Because it sure looked like there was very little room for you with guitars all over the bed.
Well, I'm just one step ahead of the fellow that I was talking to from Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
By the way, is Charlie from Atlanta?
No, sir. I'm from, I'm originally from North Carolina, but I've lived in the Nashville area now for the last 35 years.
No, I meant Charlie she was holding.
Oh, oh no. The Charlie she was holding.
There's too many Charlies
I'm
here.
Not familiar with him.
No, I think they're actually living down in Atlanta now, because Susan's from Boston. And she was sitting here in the studio with us one night when we mentioned that we know you, and she fell out of the chair, and we said, okay, here's where he's going to be. And then a couple of weeks later, she was in New York, so... You know,
yeah, they're just great. And then after the show, we were talking to some people. I don't know who they were, but I asked where they were from. They said they were from Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I says, what brings you guys down to the club? And they said, well, we heard you talking on Steve and Johnny's show.
Yep.
From Atlanta.
Yep.
So they were listening to you guys.
Now, here's the funny story as we heard it, Les. A friend of ours from Chicago was sitting at the table next to these two guys from Atlanta. And he hears them say, can you believe it? We just turned on the radio one night, and these two people are talking to Les just like he's a regular person. So our buddy said, I just sat there and bit my tongue and thought, oh, that's just so silly.
Well, Les, we're going to let you get back to your popcorn, but in the not-too-distant future, look for an incredibly talented guy with a beard and a big old hat, and that'll be Charlie Daniels, and get him up on the stage, and you'll have some fun.
I will look forward to it.
Mr. Paul, it's been an honor talking to you. Thank you very much, Charlie.
Thank you, Les.
Right,
good night.
I enjoy your work very much.
Thank you, sir.
Love you, Les. Good night.
Have fun.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Les.
Ha,
mercy.
Ha, ha.
Y'all got me.
Gotcha.
You got me. You got me. Absolutely. I never thought I would ever talk to.
And Les, he is the sweetest person in the world.
You can tell that on the telephone.
Oh, yeah. You just.
I'm going to definitely try to get by. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and try to start making arrangements about that. I think it's first of next month. Sometime during the first part of next month, we'll be up there.
But you got to promise us, if you do that, you got to call us after the show.
I will do it. I will absolutely call you. If I get by there, I will call you. I've got some commitments. I'm hoping I can get by there. In fact, I've got some commitments. I'm going to have to get out of here and let my driver get down the road and get some rest.
Yeah, you're going to Dallas.
Going to Dallas, Texas.
Going to Dallas.
Yeah, we are indeed.
And folks can check out your schedule at charliedaniels.com. And so often we just talk about Charlie, but it's CDB, as in
Charlie Daniels Band. Absolutely.
And you got a great band. They've been with you forever, and they really showcased beautifully on this album, Redneck Fiddlin' Man. You can purchase the album on the website, and that's how you can get the Charlie, I'm bobbing my head right
bobbing
back
head.
At you. Bobbing head, Charlie Daniels doll.
Well, I want to tell you what, it is such a delight to sit here. I've said this so many times, y'all are the nicest folks in the radio.
Thank you.
And I just thoroughly enjoy being around you, and the next time we get a chance, we'll do it again.
Okay, well, we're going to tell our friend Keith Bilbrey down in Nashville. You said that.
Oh, you know Keith?
Oh, he's our best
dear friend.
Friend
of ours.
Oh, bless his heart. He's one of the goodest. Last time we played the Opry, me and Keith sit in the dressing room and told Bill Monroe stories. And he's got, I know a few, but he knows a thousand of them.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. He's one of the good ones.
I can't wait till he writes the book.
He's an absolutely wonderful guy. Yeah. He sure is that.
Well, you too.
Charlie,
thank you.
Thanks
you
a million.
Thank
it is always fun to see you.
The pleasure was all mine, and I am honored to be here, and we'll do it again.
Be
all
safe.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Charlie Daniels.